Welcome back. Are you still there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Yes, okay. As I was saying, that most of the points that you raise, I really can't disagree with at all. My concern, though, is if we are really thinking in terms of a closer relationship, I really think that that is far down the road, because we have too many problems here to combat. I think that what we need to do in terms of the OECS situation is that we need to fix LEAD. And when I say fix LEAD, I'm talking prices. And again, we go back then to the prices, the different taxes at the different airports. Something I dealt with on Tuesday. Because, I mean, it's ridiculous. I think Antigua is now, how much is Antigua now? It's $700 to $800?
I don't know. I don't usually concern myself with those things.
Okay.
That's the truth. That's
right.
Taxes you have to pay. You have to pay them.
Yeah, but it's really, really difficult. And you see, the thing is that I don't think the average Barbadian really realizes the amount of the volume of business that comes to Barbados because of the OECS. Let's look only at the U.S. Embassy being based here. If you're anywhere in the OECS territories, you have to fly into Barbados to get an appointment. You get an appointment, you fly into Barbados to get your visa. Some people leave the same day or they overnight. But the point is that, and then there's tax. The taxis do a lot of business that way. As I said, people overnight. And Barbados, of course, gets their taxes through the airport because of that, you know?
That airport, that LEAD thing is, the way I look at that, is I don't look at it from the taxes point of view. I look at it from the point of view. It is an essential service. You can't do without LEAD. So governments have to, they will eventually get there, I assume. They must get to the point when they realize, listen, this is not going to be a cost-effective sort of deal for us. We are going to have to fund it. End of story. And understand that you can be running yourself into deficits come the end of the year by doing so. Otherwise, it won't work. You can always be bickering with one another.
But you realize that Ms. Motley hinted to Alan Chastanay, when she went to the this meeting in the OECS, she said that I hope that other people will be partners. Words to that effect. Because, you know, St. Lucia is forever taking this hands-off thing. They're not paying money into LEAD, which is folly.
Well, but we still need their service, whether they're paying into it or not. Actually, that goes back to just the point I was making about having an Eastern Caribbean central bank in individual countries.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those countries can't get it. Let's say St. Vincent, but St. Vincent pays in. Pick one, St. Lucia doesn't, right?
Yeah.
St. Lucia just can't get up and say, listen, we becoming a shareholder in the year. They've got to get permission to find the money from the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And if Eastern Caribbean Central Bank says no, that we have enough dollars, basically, EC dollars out there currently floating about, that's the end of St. Lucia and that.
Yeah.
And that's, you see, the dangers of being in the currency board.
Yes. Yes.
So when I hear Antigua too, sometimes Antigua got up one day, the Prime Minister, and said, if we move the base, he can buy it out. And I laugh. I said,
yeah, but he was obviously joking.
Yeah. And beg, can't buy out nothing.
But that situation with LEAD in Antigua really needs to be fixed. I mean, you know, the amount of jobs that it generates for Antigua is a situation where it's always a big deal. But the reality is that the way how things have shifted, the movement of peoples have shifted as they travel throughout the Caribbean.
Rail hub.
Yeah, the rail hub is here in Barbados.
Yeah, rail hub,
you know. So that's just it.
So, Mr. Price, I have to leave, but if you will allow me just to be wicked for 1 minute.
Go ahead.
Nobody can get sued, don't worry. But I can't go without being wicked. And I have to put on a voice to do it. You had a caller come in and he said, Mr. Price, the NSRL does not increase the cost of goods.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, does it? But Mr. Price, We only moved from 1.3 to 4% of inflation, but that is not increasing the cost of goods, okay? That is just a number. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I had to say it. I can resist that. If you'll forgive me, sir, I have to run.
Have yourself a great day. Huh? Thank you for calling. Really enjoyed that call. Good morning. You're on the air. Hello. You're on the air. Good morning. You're on the air. All right. Let's do this here. Let me see if you are you there now? Nope. All right. Let's just read this one.
Hello?
Oh, yes. Okay. Go right ahead, sir.
Am I on the air now?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Matthew Sainsbury. I've been having some problems I had a heart problem last week I had a situation where I can't hear properly over my right ear.
Sir, before you go any further, I want you to be, you're on the air. The whole of Barbados is listening to you right now. Is this a conversation you intend to speak to on Brass Tacks, or this was a call made so you can speak directly to someone to get assistance?
Well, some of it is that too, yeah, because I would like to hear the MP, Cynthia Ford, because they need some assistance in getting some ability so we can get some little bit of home help to get some food. Mm-hmm. Because
have you called the ministry?
Yeah.
And have you called her constituency officer?
I've called, I get help from the weather officer, but I tried to call her, but no one there is there right now. I called the Salvation Army, but they tell me I need to get a note from the welfare office in order to...
Yes, that's the requirement.
From the Salvation Army. They tell me that. I didn't know that.
Yes, that's the requirement to stop people from abusing the system, as has been going on for some time. But I would suggest, sir, before you...
Because I have a blood sugar problem, see?
Yes, but these are personal problems, and you gave your name, and I really don't think that you should be hearing these things unless you first exhaust these avenues that are open there to you. And then if you come back to us, you don't have to give your name. It's an anonymous thing that you can speak, okay?
Okay. All right.
And I wish you better. This is Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Sanka.
How are you today?
This is Adrian Donovan calling from the South Coast.
Hi, Adrian.
Man,
you're on the air, Oki. You're on the air.
Yes. I got to call and make a report.
Okay.
Because some people have been asking me, they've not been hearing me for a little while. But I don't believe that I had an opportunity to come because the authorities now are calling every other day, every other week. So what I was doing before, they're no, and they're taking that task. But as a resident, I still have to report to my constituents. I just finished driving through my area.
Which part of your area? And the South Coast.
The South Coast. People started down by Rendezvous, come across, go down by Worthing, Hastings, come up by Graham Hall, up in Dover. That is the area that was affected by the sewage.
Mm-hmm.
So I must report to you now that the 18 locations that were previously given problems, this would have been areas on personal's private property and on public or business establishments. There are absolutely no leakages right now. The streets are completely dry. Our work definitely has improved. I was waiting on the authorities. They had asked for 2 weeks to get some work done, and I could report that there has been a tremendous improvement, Sanka, in this national crisis. However, I must also indicate to you that although one or two businesses have reopened, the flow of customers have been very slow. Businesses in the area are still down between 20% and 24%, so it has not picked back up. But I'm also calling today on the Postmaster General to let him know that all is well. The last time the office was closed was April the 11th, and I'm suggesting him know that he could reopen the post office.
It's a she.
She. So the pensioners in the area don't have to go to Brother Hill any longer. So, all in all, Sanka, we, the regulars in the business on the South Coast, are quite happy with the work that is going on, and we will continue to give this new administration and the authorities our support. And all we wanted for and we asked for was some regular and constant communication, which we have been getting.
You would recognize, though, Adrian, that this is not the final fix, that they have a lot of work to do.
Definitely so, because as I was saying, it's not off the road and be very happy. It has to go somewhere else. And right now it's going to the swamp. Mm-hmm. It's not an ideal situation. But I believe that all of us in that area would prefer to go in the swamp and by extension into the sea. They have been opening the swamp gates quite often, which was suggested by the old fishermen in that area. And this has been going on. So the problem has definitely eased a lot, Sangha. They've definitely eased. And later on down, my final suggestion, later on down when the whole episode is completed, I will hope that the administration will take in some consideration the pain and the grievance that a lot of these business houses have encountered. And I know the economic situation may not permit a financial payout, but I believe some kind of remit in the water bills, the sewage bills down the road to these affected people's anchor. There can be some kind of a remit, a reduction of their bills at the end of the month. I don't think I'm asking too much, Shankar.
Well, are you also calling in to encourage people to come back to the South Coast? I get that impression as well.
Definitely so. I went back to Chicken Barn last week, the first time in over 2 months. It was open the other day, and it's no under air condition. You know, it was originally closed since last December. Mm-hmm. The food is tasting lovely again. Much better condition. And I support go to Chicken Barn. I can only ask the people to return to the South Coast. And by extension, the properties, the business houses, and down by Lanterns who are suffering. I would also encourage the people that all is well for the time being on the South Coast. So those of them during the election campaign who wanted to know where Adrian Donovan was living and where he is now, I'm well, and I'm reporting that everything on the South Coast is well.
All right, Adrian. Thank you. A lot of people don't know that Adrian Donovan and I were at school together. That's why I had to remind him that he's on the air so he would say something. But, okay, and this is totally separate now from your South Coast thing. Who do you have to win the World Cup, man?
Oh, Sanka, I was in pain. I was in distress yesterday, Sanka. I thought at one time my heart would have stopped beating. I'm a German. I'm going to be a German all my life.
I remember that, Aki. That's why I had to trick you.
Yeah. But I also have to be fair, honest with you, Sanka. As a football analyst also, I saw the warning signs. I saw the danger signals, and they weren't taken. So when they were eventually knocked out, I was not totally surprised at all. It was a surprise.
France and Argentina. France and Argentina. Which one do you pick?
Oh, I have all the greatest respect to the best footballers in the world, a man by the call of Lionel Messi. I will hope, Shankar, that this is his swan song this year. This is going to be his final last chapter on the international stage. And I'm hoping just for his sake, he could do it one final time. One final time.
But, all right,
Shankar, I must also tell you, it's also an open World Cup. It's also an open World Cup. There are no favorites right now that is playing football better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. There's no big teams anymore. The gap has narrowed. It has narrowed. And if we want to lose a political slogan, Shankar, how last election proved that there are no safe seats.
All right.
There are no safe seats in world football.
A guy here is saying, sorry, guys, Spain.
Yes, okay. You have a chance. You have a chance.
All right.
That's
what
Dennis Johnson.
No, it isn't Dennis. Okay. No, it's somebody here in the chat. Okay, Adrian, thanks for calling. Give us an update on the South Coast. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. One person here is saying, go France. Next person is saying, Brazil. What's your World Cup choice? Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning to you, sir.
Yes.
My World Cup choice is, I will always be with Brazil.
Like most Caribbean people, I believe.
I suspect.
All right. I want you to go along with me. When I say go along with me, ask me whatever, but give me a little time.
Yes, please.
I want to go into Liat. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to you about Liat before because I used to fly with them.
Okay.
Now, when you talk about Liat, and we say the headquarters is in Antigua, that is correct. Headquarters in terms of the administrative end of things, management higher level. But maintenance is also in Antigua. There's a hangar that does maintenance, carries parts, etc., etc. No, there are, however, two crew bases, Antigua and Barbados. And the main reason for that is that the Barbados crew would tend to handle the southern routes of the Caribbean. Of course, we'll go up as far as Antigua. And the Antigua crews would handle coming as far as here, but then they also handle, like, St. Kitts, Tortola, St. Martin, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So there is headquarters in Antigua, the maintenance and the hangar is in Antigua, but two crew bases. For many years, going back to way back with Errol Barrow, the plan was, or the hope was, that to move the quote-unquote headquarters to Barbados. But that would include maintenance. We would have to construct a reasonably big hangar, if that was going to be done here, located obviously on the airport somewhere. And that is one aspect of looking at it. But in terms of the operations of Liat, I've said on this program before, the main thing that needs to be tackled first and foremost is the schedule. Because there are too many flights going. I know everybody wants their little piece of the pie because you're contributing and you want your piece of the pie. But I'll say Dominica, for example. Why would we have 5 and 6 flights going to Dominica on a day? When I was with Leanne in the 80s, that wasn't the case. You had about 3, maybe 4 flights. I mean, like, 1, 4, like, 8. A landing and a takeoff is a flight. So you had, like, 4 of those in a day, morning and evening, maybe 1 in between. And as far as I'm concerned, if St. Lucia does not want to contribute to Liat but get the services like everybody else, I would stop flying into St. Lucia. People may say, but how are you going to do that? And they're going to lose the revenue. Because I will bet you that when St. Lucia loses the revenue too from the tourism, they will wake up and contribute to Liat. You got to call a spade a spade. I know we are looking at integration, Mr. Price. But we can't continue with these people not making, pulling their weight on the issue. I don't know if you agree with me.
Totally.
So, all I'm telling you is that is the Liat that I know and I could see. We have over like 75 flights, 75 landings and 75 takeoffs per day. You can imagine that in an airline. And not because I was a pilot, but if you are working in a company and you are the man, okay, the sewage project, the fellas that going down in the hole with the camera and this and that, you think the fella that's standing at the top of the road know more about what's going on than them that gone inside of there? Liat does not listen to its pilots, but let the pilots stick out for a day or have a reason to talk about pay. Oh, the Liat pilots are the worst thing in the world. But I'll tell you something. Look at the airline, okay? Just like we had BWIA and now Caribbean Airlines, the safety record is outstanding. 75 flights a day, and Liat has had one single crash in its lifetime. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. It does have a great safety record, and I can't fault what you're saying at all. The scheduling is a problem, and places like Dominica in particular, you really have to ask why there's the amount of flights that they do get. But it is something that needs to be really tackled, and the sooner the better, because at the end of the day, we just can continue talking and talking about this situation, but very little is being done about it otherwise, which is a pity. Thank you very much, sir, and have a great day. You're on Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. Good morning, sorry. It's now 11:31. Don't forget, we break at 11:55 for the regional round. But you're on the air.
Good morning, Frank. How are you doing?
I am well, sir. How are you?
I'm good. You had a gentleman who was talking about the currency boards or what have you.
Yes.
In the Caribbean.
Yes.
Now, I know nothing about currencies, but what he said makes a lot of sense. It sounds really good. The only problem that I envision is that the cooperation that's required within all the Caribbean countries in order to facilitate and in order to get something like this moving. Because each of those Caribbean countries also wants to get that U.S. foreign exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So because Trinidad needs to get that money in order to import stuff from other places, from not necessarily within the Caribbean, but I mean extra-regionally. So therefore, they need that U.S. money. So therefore, they will probably be more reluctant to get into that sort of arrangement and using only then this Caribbean currency in order to do their trading.
Actually,
because it's like disadvantageous to them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand my address.
Yeah, I'm with you. Actually,
right.
That your argument, if we take it to its logical conclusion, is the argument that has consistently been used, the suggestion that has been consistently used, that the entire Caribbean should really use the U.S. currency and not any of their currencies. Because
I see again there. That,
no, seriously, you know the argument.
No, but I understand that. But again, this brings in the problems that then the individual countries given up control over their respective currencies. Or their respective central banks are giving up that level of control.
But you know what the argument for that, the counter argument to that is? Because what is happening, okay, the argument at one point, if you're saying you have your own central bank, like Barbados, Guyana, Trinidad, Jamaica, okay? The OECS, they have one central bank for all of those islands. Now, because these bigger territories, what we used to call the MDCs years ago, because they have their own central bank, then they would have an administration that would be a bit excessive, and you have problems. So we've seen that in all these territories, and we've seen that happen in Barbados over the last 10 years. No one in the OECS can really go that far because they utilize one central bank. Correct? You with me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
So the argument is that if you are going to have the excesses that were taking place normally in all these territories that dates back from the 70s, then if all of them use the U.S. currency, we wouldn't have that problem. And for sure, you know, you see what happens in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Which uses the U.S. currency, which, you know, interchangeably with the Bahamas dollar.
Sanka, hold on. Don't get me wrong, you know.
I'm just trying to be provocative here.
No, but I think you're misunderstanding me in a certain way, right? Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to say is that I do agree that, let's say, we could use the U.S. dollar, right? That might be best thing for the region. But what I'm saying is that politically, the reasons why it hasn't been done, right? These are the reasons, because each of those individual governments given up control over their respective currencies and the ability to do these things to mismanage as they have, then they would also have been given up that. In short, Barbados would not have been able to print all the money it wanted in the world over the last few years,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So therefore, for the political reasons, that we are not doing a lot of things. And they keep coming to this program and keep trying to emphasize that there. It is for purely political reasons that a lot of things have not been done in this country and throughout the Caribbean. Now, we were talking just now about LEAD, right? Again, politically, the dependence of each country on the taxes that they get from their airport because of other things, because it's difficult for them to, let's say, get taxes from other areas in the economy, as easy it is to say for them to slap a tax on the airport and get money consistently from people coming in there. That is why we end up with this sort of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And although we criticize now what the level of taxation in the other countries, we are now also going to be doing this here with that, with the increase in that tax.
Yep.
Right? We are doing the exact same thing. And the only solution we would have to look at, Liat, from a reasonable perspective, almost the same way like we looked at the Suez crisis, as a Caribbean-wide emergency or what have you,
mm-hmm.
where everybody can sit down at the table and say, listen, we need to separate Liat and the transportation which occurs throughout the Caribbean from the economies essentially of the Caribbean, and then make it then as a properly run private company that then is able to provide the transportation services throughout the entire Caribbean and somehow delink it from taxes. I am not an expert in that, so therefore I can't deal with that. I can't speak to that. But I just know we have to take a totally different approach and sit down to discuss it. Now, you were talking about the price situation.
I don't think
Barbadians in Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
I think really and truly it is a waste of energy trying to figure out how is going to raise or lower prices by 10% if they go up or go down or whatever, right? Or all that sort of stuff going on. It is going to be a total waste of energy. Okay, because you cannot really and truly tell a person how much he or she should charge for a particular service unless you're in a situation where less is a monopoly, where that person then has, where you as a consumer have absolutely no choice other than to get that service or product from one particular person. Okay? Because you can't determine a person's overheads, for example. Let's say I have air conditioning, and I'm running air conditioning 24/7 in my establishment. I can't then charge the same price as you would if you don't have any air conditioning. Okay? Depending on it, if I buy in bulk, if I buy 250,000 things of one units of one particular item, and you buy 10, obviously the bulk price that I pay is going to be far different from what you pay. So therefore, when you try to factor in all of those different situations, right, you really and truly cannot then determine that, okay, this person should be selling something at a particular price or not. And I knew some person who worked in the with one of the supermarket chains here. And they were explaining to me that although they have several different locations and they buy the same product that then goes to each different location, each location is price sensitive in that one particular, if they put a particular markup on the product at one particular location, it would sit on the shelf for days or weeks or whatever. And they have to shift that price up or down or what have you because of the particular community that was then patronizing that particular establishment. Right? So therefore, all of those complexities come in to the situation at the same time. And they used to order product for the hotels that I used to work for. So I was in charge of the warehouse. So therefore, again, I am fully aware of the fluctuations that you're going to get in price depending on how long you have a particular product there for and how often it's used, all those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
What is more important for the government to do, as I said, is that to make sure that no monopoly situation exists where then people are definitely taking advantage of the particular situation, right? And especially when, let's say, you have a hurricane, the threat of a hurricane, and those sort of things. Now, it is quite a lot easier for government to maintain the controls over that there than this exercise we're going to have right now. Let me give you an example. Massey is going to be charging for bags, I'm being made aware, from next week. So therefore, the price, the cost that they used to absorb before in producing the bags, they now aren't absorbing anymore. So therefore, in theory, can you then argue and say that Massey should have reduced their prices by that money that they aren't no longer going to absorb as well? Right? That's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The other things that I think are more important for government to deal with the private sector that we have. For one example, I feel our private sector is lazy in a way. Okay? Because they are not forced, they're quite happy with carving up the Barbadian market and keep carving it and carving it and carving it, as opposed to going outside and exploring market opportunities outside and bringing in revenue into Barbados. I have always given the argument that Chafet should have gone, being forced to go into the state and franchise or whatever, ever since, as opposed to taking up more and more of the available market space and opportunity in Barbados itself. Now, there were 20 or 30 locations or whatever.
No, man, no. I think they're only 14.
No, sorry, 14 then. My apologies. 14, there's still plans for more. But the point
I'm trying to get across
is that when you then when you consume the market to that degree, when you saturate the market to that degree, you then drive out other local competition that would have been an entrepreneurial local competition that would have developed.
Theoretically, yes, but theoretically, yes, I agree with you theoretically, but what I have found, because it's a particular area of interest of mine, what I have found, there seems to be this energy in among, I suppose, a lot of young people who are into producing Barbadian dishes, in some of the most unlikely places in communities, and I find that it seems to be spreading. More and more people seem to be doing it, and that's good, you know, as long as they conform to the conditions. So that's why I said I agree with you theoretically. What you're saying is true, because if you have one dominant business in the entire market, they can really absorb most of the of that market, you know.
But Saka, but that's what I'm trying to tell you. This is what has stymied a lot of entrepreneurial activity in that respect, because there is no room in that market. Whereas you have,
there's no room for that fast food type of market. But
no,
look at the putting themselves things, people, places who are putting themselves on weekends. Look at the people who are now selling the different types of cuckoo during the week.
But
these places are doing a roaring business.
Sanka, no. Hold on. There is roaring business, and then there is roaring business. Okay, and you are talking on two totally different levels. Okay? You're talking about the revenues that Chafet and that sort of operation brings in, as opposed to a little mom and pop operation that they're operating on a weekend or whatever that might make money on a Thursday or Friday night. Okay? So therefore we can see all those sort of things, but those we are talking about totally different levels of operation.
Fair enough.
All right? So therefore when the point which I'm making is that the private sector, the major players in the private sector are satisfied to a great degree about carving up the market that is Barbados itself, because they're comfortable in that respect. They have the money in order to do it, and then that suppresses the entrepreneurial activity that is possible, that can spring up from the bottom itself. Okay? And what the government has to do, in my opinion, the energy that the government should be focusing on is to try to stop that sort of populism. There's another word that people use for it. When somebody, when the players in the market then suppress the activity of anybody else entering that market. Mm-hmm. Right? And they have to try to redirect that there in order to get people outside. Mm-hmm. Now, forgive me for going on a bit long, but I just want to say something about this, sir. Barbadians are under this delusion, and I think it's one of the mistakes of this administration that they've started with, trying to tell people that oil prices are going to go down. Okay? And the evils of the NSRL that's happening and stuff like that there. And the argument, yes, you cannot tax your way out of a recession, which is in truth correct. But one of the things which I have to emphasize to Barbadians is that the crisis that we're in right now means that there has to be sacrifice, means that more, you are going to pay more, okay, in order to avoid the devaluation of the dollar, for example. Okay, if we don't want things to get worse, we have to be prepared to pay to fix the problem. And this is a message that I think should be the emphasis from this administration. Not to say, oh, well, we're going to look and try and make sure that prices go down and that sort of stuff. No, no, no. That is not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You are going to pay more money.
All right, sir.
But at the end of the day, we are going to see the benefits from it.
Okay.
That is the message that I have to get across.
All right, sir. I gave you a long run today. Take good care. Nice hearing you. We take one more call. You're on Brass Tacks. Good morning.